This is Court of International Trade, Court Number 19-00053, National Association of Manufacturers et al. Versus the United States et al. The Honorable Jane A. Rustani presiding. Will the attorneys please state their names for the record, starting with the plaintiffs?
Good morning, Your Honor. This is Geisler from Sidley Austin on behalf of the plaintiff, the National Association of Manufacturers, and also with me on the line are my colleagues Barbara Broussard and Tobias Loss-Eaton.
Thank you.
Good morning. Good morning, Your Honor. This is James Tice from Akin Gump. I represent plaintiff intervener, the Beer Institute. Also with me on the line is my colleague, Lars Helm.
I'm sorry, I lost you. What's your name?
My name is James Tice.
Okay, can you spell that?
Sure. T-Y-S-S-E.
Oh, okay. Now I know. Thank you.
Morning, Your Honor. This is Alex Vanderweed with the Department of Justice. Along with me on the call is David Morrell, also from Justice, and Alexandra Krebtikova from CBP, and Daniel Paisley from Treasury.
Good morning, Your Honor. This is John Peterson with Neville Peterson on behalf of Amicus Customs Advisory Services, Inc. With me on the line are Richard O'Neill and Patrick Klein.
Anybody else? Is my
That's everyone, Your Honor.
Sarah, are you there?
I'm here.
You didn't? Okay, great. That's my law clerk. Anybody else, Jeff?
Mary Ann's on the line.
Mary Ann Brando.
Okay, that's my judicial assistant. Okay. The first thing I want to do as a matter of housekeeping is, Jeff, will you enter a docket entry accepting the amicus brief, permitting it to be filed?
Yes, Your Honor.
Okay. Now let me start with where we are, and I'm going to ask for the government to answer this. I'm a little confused. We had a judgment, and I just read the judgment. It says the government must pay and process substitution drawback claims. That sounds like it's in the nature of an injunction to me. If it is, I don't know why there wasn't any request for a stay before this. And if it's not an injunction, I think there's only 30 days automatic stay, unless there's a provision affecting the government that I don't know about. I looked at Rule 62A. I didn't see anything about the government except the lack of a necessity to file any security, which doesn't apply in this case anyway. So why are we seeking a stay now, and why didn't we do it before?
Well, Your Honor, in order to seek a stay, we need authorization from the SG's office as for the appeal of this action, and that remains pending with the SG's office right now. So we filed a notice of appeal to protect our interests and seeking a stay to preserve the status quo pending that appeal.
Okay. Well, guess what? You're in violation of an injunction. If it's an injunction, and you're too late. It seems to me that you're filed a protective notice of appeal now. You could have filed it in time. You could have filed it timely and say this is just protective and then seek your stay. I don't understand how you can ignore the rules.
It's my understanding that we have 60 days from the judgment with which to notice our appeal, Your Honor.
That is. Yes, you may have 60 days from the judgment to notice your appeal. But the rule says you have 30 days to seek a stay. So obviously, you have to file for an appeal sooner, at least in a protective matter, in order to get a stay, unless you've got some case that tells me that our rule is incorrect and you get an automatic stay of 60 days.
I don't have that information in front of me, Your Honor. I would need to consult and research
All
that
right.
further and provide that information to the court at a later
briefing. Okay, well, let me put it this way. I'm seriously displeased. I thought I entered an injunction, and I don't see it obeyed. And I don't see any request to do anything to stay the injunction pending you're thinking about an appeal. I think there's a problem. I think you're not following the law. I'm happy to find out that I'm wrong and you're doing everything correctly, but I couldn't find anything to tell me that. So with that, I guess you better tell me why it is you're not ready today. Better file something and tell me why it is that you are not in violation of an injunction that's out there. Anyway, so that's where I am. Does anybody wish to comment on this? All right. Nobody wants to comment on it. So let me know why it is you could do what you did and wait this long. I'm very confused about that. Okay. So then let's go to what you want. As you can tell, I am very much leaning towards just leaving this order in place without a stay so that the payments that Congress says should be made can be made. And there's, you know, they did accelerated drawback, which allows the parties to put up bonds to get their money, and then you all decide later what the correct amount is. That's how I understand the thing to work, and I think the government's fully bonded. So I guess my next question is, should we have a suspension of liquidation? And I'm telling you, I'm kind of thinking in that direction for this reason. 1504A has reasons for getting a suspension of liquidation. This may fit into them like we're waiting for the Court of Appeals. It may not, but it sounds like I'm just asking for a bunch of litigation if I don't suspend liquidation. So that's basically what I'm thinking. So will somebody talk to me about this? We can start with the government. Why you're not consenting to that part, I don't know, and explain to me what your problem is.
Thanks, Your Honor. Alexander Reed again with Department of Justice. Well, we're seeking, we have a problem with just the suspending of the liquidation as opposed to the claims themselves so that we can preserve the status quo as is normal pending appeal. But also, as described in the status report, there's a certain amount of processing that needs to get up and running to process these claims and to pay AP and do the normal validations through both the computer system and the normal checks to review each claim. If that then is, if we have to segue from that, if the court's judgment is overturned on appeal, then there's a lot of resources going into building that up and unwinding it. And I appreciate what Your Honor is saying, that these, that AP is a fully bonded process and the sureties and claimants are joint and severally liable. But however, as we could see in the filings of the parties are, there's a certain amount of dire financial straits that the parties have described in their filings. So there's no assurance that the claimants and sureties will be viable entities should the court's judgment be overturned and the government has to go after that AP. This would, could create further litigation, whether in a collection action by the government or if demands for the AP are refused by claimants. So we believe that the prudent course right now is to not pay AP. That protects the public fisc. It ensures that after all appeals process, the AP can be directed where it needs to go, whether to the claimants in the event the judgment's upheld or not paid in the event that it's overturned. And it, I believe that there's no risk if the government holds the money through the appellate process. So that's why we're seeking a suspension of processing of the claims themselves and not just the liquidation of the claims.
I got your argument. I understand that you want the full Megillah. You're not going to get the full Megillah. I have to do this the way Congress says, and I have decided Congress has said it that way, and that's how we're going to do it. The only question in my mind, now that I've heard your argument, is shall I suspend liquidation and do that part? I don't see how that is going to impede you in any way from getting ready to pay these people, as you've already been ordered to pay, and I haven't heard anything you've said saying why the separate piece of stay of suspension of liquidation shouldn't happen if I decide that the parties should be paid accelerated drawback if they do the steps that Congress lays out for getting accelerated drawback. So just answer my question, assuming at this moment, not very arguendo, but arguendo, that you're not going to get a stay of the payment obligation. So if you're not getting a stay of the payment obligation, why shouldn't I suspend liquidation?
We agree, Your Honor. You should suspend liquidation if you are going to order processing of the AP at this time.
Okay. Thank you. Now, I want to hear from the other parties. Mr. Keisler, what do you think?
Thank you, Your Honor. Look, our principal point is that we don't oppose a suspension of liquidation, as we said in our brief, and we think that proposal completely addresses any possible claim the government has of potential irreparable harm, and indeed the entirety of the claim of irreparable harm it made in its brief for its stay motion. On pages 4 to 7, its sole claim was that some drawback claims, it said, might become deemed liquidated before the government's appeal concludes. And suspending liquidation completely addresses that. If the court enters that order, nothing will become deemed liquidated until the Federal Circuit appeal is done. And as you said, under the rules, any accelerated payment is going to be fully bonded. And so we think that demonstrates that the request the government made in its brief for this much broader and more expansive form of relief, in which they would suspend the processing and payment that the court has held is their obligation, is indisputably just much broader than is necessary to address their own claim of irreparable harm. And with respect to the suggestion that a broader order is necessary to protect against the possibility that some surety will fail in the future, I mean, bonding is the traditional mechanism to fully protect the government's or any party's interest in securing payment that it might ultimately need to recover in the event an appeal goes its way. And so, suppose theoretically one could always say a surety might fail, and that's never enough to suggest that bonding doesn't itself fully cover any argument of irreparable harm. And the only other point I would make is that the one additional color that Mr. Vanderweide put on that, which was to note that these are challenging times for businesses, to suggest there might be some enhanced likelihood of some failure of the sureties down the line. But that cuts entirely in the opposite direction. I mean, the government's argument here is that we won't be hurt if the court grants a complete block of all payment and processing, because they'll say we ultimately will get paid in a year or two if the government's appeal is unsuccessful. But that just ignores the reality of the current situation. I mean, even in normal times, as the amicus brief makes clear, the whole point of accelerated payment was adopted because it was understood that businesses need working capital currently, and they were getting deprived of that because of undue delays in liquidation. That's for normal times. This isn't normal times, as Mr. Vanderweide has said, but what that means is that businesses are challenged, cash flow is challenged, and that need to be paid now, and the difference between being paid now, being told, well, you'll get your money in a year or two, is a significant material difference. I mean, we're living in a world where Congress, at the Treasury Secretary's urging, rushed out these stimulus bills because it recognizes that cash now matters and is not the same thing as cash in a year or two. And the only other thing I would mention, just to go back to the initial point Your Honor raised, our members were significantly concerned upon reviewing the government's status report yesterday, where it said it's going to take 30 to 90 days to update its system to make accelerated payment claims once the government initiates that work. So our understanding from reviewing that filing is that that work hasn't even been initiated yet, and we don't understand that. The court's decision was issued in January. Its judgment was issued in mid-February. That judgment, as Your Honor said, required that these be made going forward, and it's now 3 months later. So it seems like the government has effectively granted itself a stay, and we don't know of any lawful basis for that. And the other thing we would request that Your Honor consider is directing the government to immediately initiate that work that apparently hasn't been initiated today, to hold it to, you know, we would think a 30-day limit. That's within the government's time frame, but at the low end of that, obviously, to complete that work and perhaps to require some periodic reports about the status of making these payments, because we were surprised yesterday to find out we were in the situation we're apparently in today where the work hasn't yet begun.
Thank you. I think I have an intervener. Do you want to say anything?
Thank you, Your Honor. This is James Tice on behalf of the Beer Institute. The Beer Institute agrees with what Mr. Keisler just said and doesn't have anything to add other than that, you know, these outstanding payments are, would be very valuable to our clients right now in this challenging environment, as Mr. Keisler noted. And but otherwise, we agree with the arguments he made.
Okay. Let me just check here. All right. Mr. Peterson, do you have anything you wish to say?
Thank you, Your Honor. No, we agree with everything that Mr. Keisler said. With regard to the status report that was filed yesterday, we think the court should get a little more detail from the government. I mean, it wasn't supported by any declaration from somebody at Customs. We consulted with our clients. First of all, the government says there's some sort of automatic hold or hold program in the system. However, there have been some of these excise tax drawback claims which were liquidated with drawback by operation of law as recently as March of this year, which makes us question whether there is a hold in fact. And I don't know why it would take 30 to 90 days to unprogram a hold in the system. And that's something the government should be required to explain a little more. As we understand, it would be a matter of just returning the drawback claims to trade control in the system so that the people can elect their AP status. And one more thing, Your Honor, I think if the court's going to order, or this is probably subsumed in the existing judgment, the court should not only require that drawback be paid to people who already have accelerated payment privileges. We understand that there's a stack of applications for accelerated payment privileges that the government hasn't touched, and I think the processing of drawback claims should also include the processing of those applications. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else wish to say anything, including the government, in response?
Your Honor, just to address that last point by Mr. Peterson, it's my understanding that there were a few claims that deemed liquidate within Customs within 90 days of a liquidation, reliquidated those entries pursuant to 19 U.S.C. 1501. Any deemed lists have been, as far as I understand it, my understanding is just there's been some technical glitches in the AP system, so a few of those claims may have actually been improperly processed at this time. Just by way of explanation.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else? Okay, here's what I'm going to do. I am denying the government's request for a broad stay. Since everybody seems to agree, I am going to order that there be an injunction of liquidation pending the appeal in the Court of Appeals. I need some explanation from the government by 5 o'clock tomorrow as to why it has not obeyed the injunction I think I issued and why it hasn't prepared and initiated the process without getting a stay. Without asking me to hold off the effectiveness of the injunction, without doing anything. I think you can't ignore orders of a court, and I want an explanation of what the government was thinking. Now, it sounds to me we need some particulars about what we need the government to do going forward to make sure that it starts this process immediately and that it goes forward in a sensible way And I think I'm going to ask the plaintiffs and their associates, perhaps Mr. Peterson talking to Mr. Keisler and the Beer Institute, and come up with a final form of the order that will suspend liquidation pending appeal, and that will require the government to do to keep on this, to start and to keep on this. In the meantime, I'm going to write an opinion, but I'm not going to stop the order from going forward. In fact, I'm ordering it right here in open court. The government must comply with the judgment, and it must do so immediately. The other details, I'm going to leave it to a form of order to be drafted up by the plaintiff side and show it to the government and make sure that you don't ask them to do something which is impossible for the government to do. So I think we're going to leave it at that. Are there any loose ends that I haven't covered in this little speech of mine? Okay. You guys want them to do things, so get me that piece of paper as soon as possible. Government, you only have till 5 o'clock tomorrow to tell me why you're essentially not in contempt. And then we'll see what we do about that. Okay. I think we've handled everything. Sarah, have I forgotten to do something?
No, I think you're okay, Judge.
Okay. All right. Thanks, everybody. You're immediately... I've denied the stay, the full stay of the government. Government, get on it today. Start. All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, Your Honor.